Well, we're talking about authority in this hour, and it occurred to me that one of the things I needed to do was go back and look at the Old Testament, and there are so many stories in the Old Testament that teach the principles of the authority of God, and I have preached lessons about Nadab and Abihu and other New Testament examples of God's authority for so many years. But this morning, I'm going to turn with you to 1 Samuel, the 15th chapter, and I'm going to go through with you this very familiar story, and I've got 6 points, and it's a lesson that you can take home and preach. But I'm also going to mess around a little bit. And I want to take these points on authority, but tell you some of the principles that I think have very modern applications in terms of understanding how it is, why it is, that a lot of people, they end up missing the authority of God and end up being disobedient to God and end up being in the same precarious circumstance that we find Saul in after his disobedience in the case of the Amalekites. Now, this is such a diverse audience this morning, and I'm always conscious in preaching. That's one of the interesting things about preaching, is trying to talk to an audience of people who are at a lot of different levels in their understanding. And I think that's what good preaching is it's preaching that can indeed interest and communicate those different levels of people. But let me just say in the beginning this morning that I know that there are, most people in this audience are very familiar with this story, and I'm not going to tell the story. But in case there are some people in the audience who are not familiar with this story, it is this, that the prophet Samuel came to King Saul and told him to go and destroy the nation of the Amalekites. And that's an interesting command in its own right. And there is some reasoning for it, and that is, God says in verse 2, I remember that which Amalek did to Israel. And that is that the wickedness of that nation justified the extermination of that nation. But that's not our lesson at this point. But if we read that chapter, what we would find is that God directs him to go and utterly destroy them and kill them, man, woman, infant, suckling, camel, and ass, every animal and person that lived in the nation. And Saul went, and he did it. And he killed all the Amalekites except for the king, Agag. And he brought him back. And he brought back some of the animals to sacrifice. And where I want to begin reading is in verse 13, where the Lord sent Samuel to rebuke Saul for disobeying. And he said, and Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said unto him, blessed be thou of the Lord, I have performed the commandment of the Lord. And Samuel said, what meaneth then this bleating of the sheep in mine ear, and the lowing of the oxen which I hear? And Saul said, they have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spared of the best of the sheep and the oxen to sacrifice unto the Lord thy God, and the rest we have utterly destroyed. Then Samuel said unto Saul, stay, and I will tell thee what the Lord has said to me this night. And he said unto him, say on. And Samuel said, when thou wast little in thine own sight, wast thou not made head of the tribes of Israel, and the Lord anointed thee king over Israel? And the Lord sent thee on a journey, and said, go and utterly destroy the sinners of the Amalekites, and fight against them until they be consumed. Wherefore then didst thou not obey the voice of the Lord, but didst fly upon the spoil, and did evil in the sight of the Lord? Now I want to stop there for just a second, then we're going to go and read the rest of the story. But I want to establish just 2 kind of preliminary things about authority before we see what it is that is involved in Saul's violation of the authority of God. But when Samuel comes out to meet him, he says 2 things which I think are terribly pertinent for us in understanding authority. And the first one is, He said, what we need to get straight is who you are and who God is. And that's what we talked about yesterday. He said, now, the first thing I want to call our attention to is that you were nothing, and God made you to be the king. And what I want to tell you is that there is an order in this world that says God is the head and I am the servant, and that without God I'm nothing. And that everything I have comes from the fact that I know what I know because God speaks to me. I will tell you one reason why people don't end up doing what God says. It's because they don't recognize who God is. And they don't recognize who they are. I discover that I end up talking to a lot of people about what they ought to be doing, and I start at the wrong point. I mean, I'll find myself in somebody's living room, and pretty soon I'll be turned over there and said, well, now you know Acts 2.38 says that Peter said, if they repent and be baptized, they don't know what Acts 2.38 is and don't care, and they don't believe the Bible, and they don't know who God is. And I will tell you this. If you start out talking to somebody that doesn't honor God, then they're not going to end up doing what God says. And the first thing you have to get straight when you talk to someone about their behavior is that God is God. And you're nobody. And what you need to do is recognize that everything that you do has to be based on that relationship. Well, the second thing that he says is, let's get straight here what God said. He said, you come out and say, I went and did what God said. But listen, he said, in the first place, you're nobody. And in the second place, here's what God said. And you know what God said. And I know what God said. And our argument is not about what God said. And I'm going to talk with you about exegesis one day. And about how there are just a whole lot of folks that will come along and say, well, our problem is the reason we don't end up doing what God said is because we can't understand what God said. Well, I don't believe that. And Samuel didn't believe that. And Saul didn't believe that. He said, look, here's what God said. God sent you on a journey. He said, go and utterly destroy the Amalekites. And what you didn't do is you didn't listen. And I will tell you that one thing that's involved in the misapplication of authority today is that there's just a whole lot of folks don't listen. Oh, I used to watch Gomer Pyle sometimes because I had to watch Gomer Pyle because I had five children. And I watched Andy Griffith and Gomer Pyle, I think, all of the episodes. And every now and then, Sergeant Carter would get those fellas and he would say, are you listening? And that's what Samuel said. He said, were you listening? And I know about that. A lot of people don't listen to authority. I'm going to have to teach David Barnes something about authority here. He doesn't take authority over us walking around out here. My children sometimes didn't do that. I was amused kind of down in Florida. It dawned on me not too long ago. My wife and my youngest daughter, we were vacationing down there. And my daughter was going home. She was driving back home. And I was trying to get Dee to go someplace. And she was in there giving these final instructions, you know, to this daughter. And it just goes on and on. Now, you be careful and be sure you don't drive over the speed limit, and now you take this road. And finally I said, Deanie, don't you see that girl's eyes are glazed over? She has heard that hundreds of times. And she isn't listening. Let's go. And I will tell you that in order for the proper authority relationship to end up, what you have to do is you have to have somebody listen to God. You have to recognize that it's God that's talking, and I need to be listening, and then we need to hear. There's that wonderful passage that I use frequently in Ecclesiastes, the 5th chapter, where the writer says, keep thy foot when thou goest into the house of God, and be more ready to hear than to give the sacrifice of food. For they consider not that they do evil. Be not rash with thy mouth. And let not thine heart be hasty to utter anything before God. For God's in heaven and thou upon earth. Therefore let thy words be few. I'll tell you what we need to do is we need to shut up and listen. What everybody does is they come before God talking. They don't know anything. But they come talking. Reminds me of my friend Charlie that I may have told you about. I used to have a friend that I expect was like a friend all of you have had. I used to know a fellow that knew everything. It did not make any difference. What question was asked, he'd tell you the answer. And it didn't make any difference what was under discussion. He'd take the floor. One of my other friends said about him one time, he said, you know, Charlie's problem is he greets every question with an open mouth. Well, I'll tell you, that is what people do. And if you don't listen, you don't end up doing what's wrong. And what is just fundamental in the line of authority is that, number one, you have to recognize God's God. Number two, you have to listen to what He said. Well, let's read on. Verse 20. And Saul said unto Samuel, yeah, I have obeyed the voice of the Lord, and have gone the way which the Lord sent me, and have brought Agag, the king of Amalek, and have utterly destroyed the Amalekites. But the people took of the spoil, sheep and oxen, the chief of the things which should have been utterly destroyed, to sacrifice unto the Lord thy God at Gilgal. And Samuel said, if the Lord is great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices, as in obeying the voice of the Lord, behold, to obey is better than sacrifice. And to hearken than the fat of rams, for rebellion is the sin of witchcraft. And stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he hath rejected thee from being king. All right, four quick points. Let me tell you that are violations of God's authority and that lead us to disobedience. And the first point that I'd make is just that old simple point we make over and over again. And that is, there is no such thing as nearly obeying God. You cannot partly do what God says to do. Obedience is either you obey or you disobey. And, you know, I've preached that point for many years, and I want to make another point out of it, and I expect every preacher in this audience has heard that old illustration that illustrates the point of partial obedience of the farmer that had a farm, sent his son out and said, what I want you to do is build a house up here in this corner of the farm. I want you to come over to this corner and build a barn. And I want you to come down to this corner and put a pig pen. Come down to this corner and dig the well. And the son goes out to the farm and he comes up here and he says, oh, what a beautiful place to put the house. I'm going to put the house right up here where he said put the house. And he comes over here and he says, now this is the best place on the farm to put the barn. I'm going to put the barn right over here. And he comes down to this corner and he said, well, now this is the best place for the pig pen. It's way away from the house. And I'm going to put the pig pen right there. And he comes down here and he said, well, you know, I just don't believe we'll ever get water down there, and I'm not sure he thought about that or took that into consideration. And I'm going to put the well up here by the house. And the old question is, how many times did he do what his father told him to do? And the old answer is, he didn't ever do what his father told him to do. He did what he wanted to do. And he put the house where his father told him to put the house because that's where he wanted to put the house. And he put the barn where
His father told him to put the barn because he decided that's where the barn ought to go. And he put the pig pen where he put the pig pen because that's what he decided. And he did the same thing with the well. And the truth is, he did what his father told him to do as long as his father told him to do what he wanted to do. And the first time he disagreed, he did what he wanted to do. And the truth is, he disobedient in heart. Now, what I want to tell you is that I believe we're sitting right on top of just the dividing line in authority. And that is, you either set out and say, I will obey God, or you are rebellious and stubborn and you say, I won't obey God. And every issue is an issue in that it raises that question. There are no little and big issues. And there's no almost obedient. And just barely disobedient. Let me put that in a more modern context. Every now and then I get a discussion about modern times and somebody will say, oh, well, I said, you think you're conservative, but I know so-and-so and he's more conservative than you are about this. And you may be more liberal on this issue, he's more conservative on that one and you're more conservative. No, not a word of truth in that. There ain't nobody more conservative than me about anything. Now, let me tell you what that means. Conservative is actually a relative word. You're always conservative or liberal with regard to something. And what I'm talking about is obeying God. That's what we're talking about. Now, and let me tell you, on that question, you can't get more conservative than less conservative. You either believe you do it or you don't believe you do it. Now, I will tell you that. Sometimes people disagree with me. Sometimes I talk with brethren that I believe have exactly the same attitude toward the Bible that I have, who would say with me, 1 Peter 4:11, if any man speak, let him speak as the oracles of God. And end up, we'll study a passage, and I believe he's sincere and honest and honorable, and he ends up saying, well, I don't exactly agree with you about that. I mean, even he does that sometimes. Well, he's not more conservative or less conservative toward the authority of God. There is just one way that you can approach God's Word, and that is to say, I mean to do exactly what God tells me to do. And I will tell you, the basic kind of dividing line that happens over and over again among those that set out to restore New Testament Christianity is you come to a time when everybody's not saying that. And the question really is the question of whether I'm still committed to the proposition that what I want to do and be is exactly what God has instructed me to do and be, and that I intend to follow His direction. Now, I confess that that's not always so. And I confess I'm not done with it. And I'm not through learning. And there are a whole lot of applications of that I expect if I live on that I'll have to confront. But I intend to confront them in one way. And that is saying, Lord, you speak, and I will try to do exactly what I believe you're saying. Well, the second issue that is raised by Saul in his conversation with Samuel, is he said, well, I did do what God told me to do. And so the second thing that I want to talk to you about is the capacity of us to rationalize our conduct. That is, he said he was doing what God told him to do when he wasn't doing it. And so Samuel said, well, he had a pretty good argument. He said, if you did it, what is this lowing of the oxen and the bleeding of the sheep that I hear? Now, some of you may have heard me tell my story about my wife. My wife's a good rationalizer, actually.
And she does it about a lot of different things, but, and so do the rest of us, by the way. But I'm always reminded of an occasion years ago after we hadn't been married very long, and she used to get up and cook breakfast for me all the time. And every now and then, before she would even come into the dining room, out of the kitchen, she would say, "Now these biscuits aren't burnt." I'll tell you what I knew then. They were burnt. And what she was saying is she was kind of trying to make it like she wanted it to be, other than like it was. As I said, I frequently felt like saying when they got in there, "What meaneth then this hard black crust on the bottom here?" Now, here's the point. All of us, if we are not careful, end up rationalizing our behavior. Oh, it's awful easy to read Sermon on the Mount and rationalize. I've told young people teaching a lot of times, if they were teaching young people, I'd say, "Hey, you need to be careful about teaching these young people Sermon on the Mount, because they're going to believe it means what it says." You know, they're not old enough to have rationalized all that stuff. And I'm going to tell you, that's something all of us have to confront. But there is this other invidious way in which we confront it over and over again to start. And that is, I will tell you what happens to me regularly, and on a larger historical scale, what happens to all of us over and over again. If someone comes along and says, "Hey, I think we're doing something that we ought not to be doing." And every time somebody confronts me with that, I got to go back to the drawing board. And what I can say, I can say, "Oh yeah, we're doing just exactly what it says." And I may say that without ever thinking about it. And I'll tell you what happens historically in the course of men confronting God's authority is that the time comes when we drift off. People begin to do things and they don't think about it. And I would suspect that we're doing some things that we're not thinking about. And one of the reasons is just because you can't think about everything at the same time. But sooner or later, somebody comes along and says, "Hey, we ought to think about this. Because it doesn't conform to the principle that we've set down." And if we're not careful, by the time that happens, and by the time somebody comes along and says, "Well, think about it," what happens is what's involved is job, money, position, and connection, friends, and all kinds of things. So that instead of looking at where I am, what I do is rationalize where I am. And say, "Oh yeah, I'm still loyal to the position. I'm doing exactly what God said." When it doesn't look anything like it. There was a most interesting ad in the paper a few years back, run by the Roman Catholic Church. Maybe a Catholic here this morning. But it was a nice Columbus ad. And he said something like this. It said, "The Roman Catholic Church is the church of the New Testament." Now, I understand what a Roman Catholic is saying when he says that. What he's saying is that historically, in terms of continuity, this is the historic church. It has its origins back there. But it struck me as such an odd statement. And if one reads the New Testament and then looks at the Catholic Church, I mean, what occurs to me is that what meaneth then all of this ceremony and the incense and all of the paraphernalia that once you're not going to read about in the New Testament? And the answer to that is that human beings have this infinite capacity
to justify where we are instead of looking back at where God told us to be and what He told us to do. Well, finally, two other points. And that is, third, what Saul said is, well, I'm doing the best I can under the circumstances that I'm under. And the reason I ended up doing this is because the people wanted to do it. And what I want to tell you about that is that you can never justify your conduct on the basis of what other people do. Now, we talk about that in simple ways as well. That I can't blame my sins on my wife, or I can't blame my sins on my children, or I can't blame my sins on the devil or somebody else. But let me tell you this. You can never justify your corporate behavior on the basis of what the consequences might be. I really believe what Saul was saying was, look, saying, you overestimate what a king can do. I mean, after all, I took these people over here, and we fought this battle, and they wanted to bring some booty back. And, well, I couldn't tell them that we couldn't do that. I mean, after all, they'd dismiss me as the king if I were to tell them that. A king can only do so much. You can't just run roughshod over people. Well, I've heard that. Somebody come along and say, oh, well, I know we're doing things we ought not be doing, but nothing I can do about that, you know. Well, I'll tell you what you can do about it. You cannot be part of it. I'll tell you one of the greatest lessons that I learned early in my life. You can be a Christian right by yourself. You can do what's right, and you have nothing to fear. And if someone said, well, if you're going to move off to Singapore, and what will you do when you get there? Is there a church there? There'll be one there when I get there. And let me tell you that what you can do is you can do right in whatever circumstance you find yourself. And God won't have anything less than that. Well, finally, I'll tell you what Saul said. As he said, well, we might have done wrong, but we meant to do right. It may be that we ended up doing not exactly what God said, but we had good motive in it. The end justifies the means. What we intended to do, we brought all these sacrifices back because we're going to offer them to the Lord thy God in Gilgal. And he said, now I'll tell you what that'll do. That will impress these heathens. Because what we're going to do is we're going to take all these animals back and we'll pile them all up and we'll burn them and that smoke will go up and they'll see that for 40 miles around here and say, isn't God a great God that gave them that great victory and had this big sacrifice? Now, he didn't say really that they probably going to eat that stuff too and that they were going to get something out of it. But let me tell you that we do that. It's awful easy to come along and say, well, I know God says such and such, and it may be that I'm missing, but I'm doing something. And that's better than doing nothing. Well, no, not a bit better than doing nothing. And doing nothing is not worth anything either. But they're both the same. And the truth of the matter is, you can't do good by doing it in an evil way. And there is no way that you can bring honor to God by disobeying God. And of course, that's the lesson of 1 Samuel 15. The whole to obey is better than sacrifice, and the heart than the fat of rams. And the reason is because what is at stake is obedience, and rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft. I tell you an interesting thing about talking about little things. And why there are no little things. There are no little things. I'm ready to talk with someone about any biblical instruction. Now, I will tell you, people divide about things that ought not to divide about. We sometimes have great difficulty. I have great difficulty in setting the guidelines for what the limits of your personal conscience and my personal conscience are. But I'll tell you this. You don't raise any physical question that I'll just make. I'll be glad to sit down and talk with you about it. And think about it. And consider it. Because whatever it is that God says, rebellion is as a sin of witchcraft. Now, I want to tell you what those Jews knew what to do with the witch. They put that witch to death. But what he says is when you rebel against God, that's just like being a witch. And if you're stubborn, stubbornness is as iniquity and adultery that anytime I take what God has said and fly in the face of it and say it doesn't make any difference and I'll do it if I want to and not do it if I don't want to or I don't have to give it serious consideration, that's stubborn. That is proud, arrogant, presumptuous, human stubbornness. Just like adultery. And there ain't anything that's unimportant when it comes to my allegiance to say, Lord, you speak, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to do exactly what you say. I'm sure I don't always do it well. And I'm sure I don't know it all. And I wouldn't want to leave the impression that any of us end up being perfect, except in this way. I sure won't be. And I'll listen. You talk to me. Whatever the Lord says, I take it seriously, because He's God. And I will try to conform myself to it. And I don't want to form any human attachments that will keep me from it. And I'll guarantee you can't fake me enough to keep you from doing. And what we need to do is keep that perfect attitude toward the authority of God. If you're in this audience this morning, you're not a Christian. That's what we call you to. I think one of the most wonderful things about preaching the message that I preach is that I'm never trying to get anybody to do very much. I'm not trying to get you in my club because I ain't got any club. And I'm not trying to get you in my denomination because I'm not in your denomination. I'm never even really trying to recruit people from my local church that I go to because I don't care whether you're a church. What I just would urge you to do is obey God. Now, you need to go to church someplace where people do that. And you need to associate yourself together in ways so that you'll do that. But that's all we need. Just say, Lord, you speak, send me, and I'll read the book and the directions, and I'll try to do exactly what the directions say. And that's the invitation that we extend when we sing a song. And all we're doing is inviting people to come and serve the Lord, be Christian, follow Christ, accept the gift that He's given. Be buried with the Lord, that was risen to walk in His life, and then go to the very best of your ability, honestly say, I'll do the things that He's told us to do. If you're here this morning, you're stuck with that invitation, we can encourage you to come. We do, while we're standing.